Laudetur Jesus Christus.
Welcome to Vatican Radio's English service for South Asia.
Hello, and welcome to Inspiring Lives, a series on the lives of saints in the Catholic Church from around the world.
I'm only human. I'm just a man. Help me believe in what I could be and all that I am. Show me the stairway I have to climb. Lord, for my sake, teach me to take one day at a time.
You are listening to Inspiring Lives, a weekly feature based on the lives of Catholic saints from around the world. Saints are holy people who lived ordinary lives in extraordinary ways. These saints are examples of great holiness and virtue, and they invite us to follow their paths to holiness. Their unique stories inspire us to be rooted in our faith. God calls each one of us to be a saint.
In the last couple of years, we have witnessed several canonizations. These new saints of the Church came from various walks of life: laywomen, catechists, religious, priests, and nuns. How do they become saints? What does the Church do in canonizing people? I asked these and similar questions to Jesuit Father Peter Gumbel, the first relator or the investigating judge for the causes of saints appointed by Pope John Paul II in 1983. During the last 2 weeks, Father Gumbel explained the pastoral reasons for canonizing people, that is, to set examples of Christian living before the people of God. The process of canonization begins in a particular diocese where the candidate for sainthood died and where exists a widespread feeling among the people that the person lived a holy life. Then, on request, the local bishop decides to start the process technically called introducing the cause. Once the testimonies of the witnesses and observations of the historians are recorded by the diocesan tribunal, the process moves on to Rome, where the documents are synthesized and reduced to essential points and presented to the congregation for the causes of saints. This document, Positio, is submitted to 3 tribunals for judgment: historians, theologians, and finally a tribunal of cardinals and bishops. All these tribunals work in advisory capacity to the Pope. The only definitive judge is Pope himself, who signs the decree proclaiming a person saint. Father Gumbel, tell us the process of canonizing martyrs and non-martyrs.
If the person is a martyr and it is a question of beatification, the Pope can immediately proceed to the beatification. For the non-martyrs, you have to demonstrate that God has operated a miracle through the intercession of this particular person. And this is no longer the task of the relator. It's the undersecretary of the congregation is responsible for that. To demonstrate that something is a miracle is not an easy task, because very frequently, even among Catholic doctors who believe in miracles, they say, well, we can't explain it now, it may be 10 years from now we can. Therefore, the judgment has to be given according to the present state of medical science. We do not say that there are cases approved 50 years ago nowadays, they would no longer be considered, because medicine has made great progress. So the question is, at this particular moment, can they explain the thing from a medical point of view? We never ask the doctors, is this a miracle? This is a theological issue. The doctors are only asked, can you, on the strength of your theoretical knowledge, on the strength of your practical experience, give us a medical explanation of this extraordinary, unforeseen, and unforeseeable cure of this particular patient. And in that instance, you get the following discussions. First, it goes to a board of highly qualified university professors in medicine. They have to pass judgment on it. Again, can you explain this thing according to medical science? It happens that they say yes. In other cases, they say we need more information, we have to wait a few years to see how things continue. But there are a number of cases which unanimously state yes. For example, in the case of this native Indian, Katerina Tegaquita, this is an extraordinary case where about 20 doctors were involved. None of them is a Catholic. Many of them say we are atheists, agnostics, but we can't explain this fact. There's nothing in medical science. We have never seen a thing that we would have seen it totally impossible. And in this particular instance, this was a very complex case. At the moment where a relic of this young Native American who died 400 years ago is put on the body of the person, from that moment onward, this thing changed. This is not a coincidence.
After the doctors have given their judgment, what happens next?
After the doctors have given their judgment, it goes to the theologians. The theologians are not doctors. They are not requested to deal with the medical aspect of the matter. Simply and purely, can it be proved that this extraordinary fact is due to the invocation and the intercession of this particular person? For example, if it would come out that 3 or 4 different candidates were involved, then, of course, how can you prove that this is due to this one particular case? So this has to be examined. Did people invoke the intercession of this candidate and only of this candidate? And then it goes again to the cardinals and bishops for their judgment. But if everything is positive in the preliminary things, either of the historians or of the doctors and the theologians, not always, but frequently, but the Pope can delay things of Pius XII for more than 2 years. Because of all these objections, he was blackmailed, etc., etc. And finally he signed it.
What about the titles like a servant of God, etc.?
The title servant of God doesn't mean much. It only means that a course has been begun.
And that is begun by the local bishop?
By the local bishop. He has to do it. The local bishop has to start a procedure, you see.
It doesn't require the approval of Rome?
No, it has been decentralized. In former times, everything was ordered by Rome. Nowadays, in the wake of the Second Vatican Council, in the general trend to decentralize, they leave it to the local ordinary. Now the title. If the Pope has signed a decree on the martyrdom or on the virtues of the person, the title Venerable is given. That doesn't give right to any liturgical cult. But it is an honorary title, which means this man has been outstanding and the Pope has already decreed that he has either undergone martyrdom for the sake of Christ or the sake of his faith, or that he has practiced all Christian virtues in an outstanding manner. For the time being, an honorary title, but it has important meaning. If it is a martyr, it goes directly to the beatification.
What is the difference between beatification and canonization?
The differences are twofold. In beatification, liturgical cult, therefore masses, breviary, etc., are permitted, not imposed, permitted, but to a very limited group of people, either a diocese, a nation, a religious order, but not to the church universal. In canonization, the veneration of these people is imposed, prescribed to the Church Universal. So that is the difference. Now, Holy Father wants to make this distinction clearer, and therefore it will no longer be the same ceremony as it used to be for the beatification. The things are divided. Before the Mass, there will be a special kind of in which he proclaims the canonization. Only then there will be the Mass. In former times it was all together.
That was the third and concluding part of an interview with the Jesuit Father Gumbel, an investigating judge for the courses of saints in the Catholic Church.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Now I am found, was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fear relieved.
You have been listening to Inspiring Lives, a weekly series based on the lives of Catholic saints from around the world.